The theme of this chapter 6 is that he has all of this function in terms of the creation through the material energy and being Mahavishnu. But his most ardent desire is not to be the master, because after all, Baladev, Sankarshan, they're all in Vishnu category. But he wants to be the servant of the Lord, the servant of Krishna. Because that is the greatest pleasure, even greater than what Krishna gets. So it describes how all of the expansions of Krishna want that pleasure. Baladev and all the Vishnus and Mahavishnu and Advaita, they ardently desire to take that position of humble servant of Krishna. And so there's this wonderful pastime, because he appeared 52 years before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was an elder. And he was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, Advaita was. And so Lord Chaitanya saw him as his guru, because Ishvara Puri was also a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. So Advaita Acharya was on the level of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's guru, you understand? So he always showed him great deference, but Advaita Acharya didn't want that. He wanted to be in the position of a humble servant of Lord Chaitanya. And so he started preaching Mayavad philosophy. And he knew that this would anger Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard that he was preaching Mayavad philosophy, he went to his home and he started beating him. And Advaita Acharya went into ecstasy. Now at last I've gotten this position where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is feeling superior to me, and I can worship his lotus feet and surrender. So it was all one of the transcendental ploys of Advaita Acharya. There's a lot of tricks in these higher levels. You'll see when we tell the story of Lord Chaitanya right after he took sannyas, which is one of the sweetest pastimes in the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this is the theme of this sixth chapter. It gives a very involved description with all of Srila Prabhupada's purport of who Mahavishnu is, what the efficient cause of this material energy is, what is the material cause, and how Advaita Acharya is really both of those. Just as Krishna, he creates everything as the Supreme Spirit, but he's also the material energy. It is his energy. It's an expansion of him. So in a sense, he's both causes of everything. So that's Advaita Acharya, and he's always presented as older, as I said, because he lived to be 125, I think it was, and he didn't marry till he was 52 or 50. And then he had like five sons after that. So he has an interesting story, which we'll read in this from this book, the Panchatattva. Hopefully we can get through it. So I just wanted to recount this wonderful pastime of Lord Chaitanya at the house of Advaita Acharya, one of the sweetest pastimes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And it fully manifests this mood of Advaita Acharya of being the servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, of course, one other thing we shouldn't forget by any means, it is that because he was elder, he was in living in Shantipur, which is near Navadvip. He had a house in Navadvip also. And he saw the degraded condition of people. It was the center of learning in India at the time. There were so many scholars, so many, you know, very learned knowers of the Vedas and things. But bhakti had become practically non-existent. There were devotees there, but they were overwhelmed by the smartas and Mayavadis and others who were very prominent. So Advaita, he was lamenting, how are these people going to be delivered? There's hardly any talk of Krishna and Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita here. And so he prayed to Krishna to appear in an incarnation suitable for this age. And he started offering tulsi leaves, you know, to the Ganges and water of the Ganges and worshipping the Lord and praying. And he's known as Hunkar. One of his names is Hunkar. Hunkar means shouting out very loudly. When he would shout his Hunkar, you know, like the coverings of the universe would crack, you know, it's described like that. So he was shouting out and calling from the depths of his heart for Krishna to appear and deliver the fallen souls of this Kali Yuga. Even though technically, you know, he doesn't appear in the Kali Yuga. But of course we know he did at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it is said that, you know, it is by the calls of Advaita Acharya and the ardent desire of Advaita Acharya that Krishna appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this all-merciful form to bestow blessings on everyone from the lowest to the highest by giving out pure Krishna consciousness, pure love of Krishna, the Momaha Dhanaya Krishna Prema Padayate. So, and then when he appeared, he's also wonderfully described in the Adi Lila. He was so ecstatic, and he and Haridas Thakur were just dancing and celebrating because the baby Nimai they understood to be that avatar that they had prayed for. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu grew up in Nadia, in Navadvip, and he at first wasn't manifesting so many of these qualities of the leader of the Sankirtan movement. He was Nimai Pandit. He was a great pundit. And he had his own school at a very young age. He defeated Keshava Kashmiri in argument, even though he was a conqueror of the whole country and had defeated so many other scholars. But then he went to Gaya and to offer a pinda or shraddha ceremony for his departed father. And he met Ishwarapuri. He came back and took initiation and started the Sankirtan movement amongst the students. He couldn't teach ordinary Sanskrit anymore. Everything had to be in relation to Krishna. And so the students were wondering, Where's all our, lessons on the grammar and the logic and everything? And he said, I can't do it anymore. And so he started the Sankirtan movement by chanting, Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha Gopal Govinda Ram Shimadu Sudan. It's described in the CC. That was how he started. Everyone, they would say, everyone stand up, and they started having Sankirtan like that. So after some time, he was preaching, and he had, of course, Nityananda and Haridas going around, the famous pastime of Jagai and Madai. And he was spreading Sankirtan within the Navadvip area. And he had his encounter with the Qazi, But still, he was seeing that some of the students were criticizing, weren't offering respect to him, and so they were outside of the Sankirtan movement. So that's one of the reasons he decided to take sannyas. He knew that everyone would offer automatically respect, bow down, and by doing that, they would make advancement. Because, he's Vishnu. He saw it was more effective for spreading the Sankirtan. So this was a big shock, of course, to his mother. Because her older son, Vishwarup, had already taken sannyas and never came home. And now that shock was so great that Jagannath Mishra had disappeared. And now if Nimai takes sannyas, she said she would just die. So, but still he took sannyas. And when he took sannyas, he decided, now I'm going to Vrindavan. I'm just going to go to Vrindavan and perform bhajan there. That was his immediate desire. So he left and he had Nityananda, Mukunda, Damodar, and Jagadananda Pandit, I think. And so they were accompanying, or Nityananda was with him anyway, and Nityananda conspired to bring him back for one more darshan. It's a wonderful story. So they were going for 3 days without eating or sleeping. Nothing, just chanting. He was totally in ecstasy. So Nityananda, they started to go on the path to the Ganges toward Vrindavan in the forest and in Radhadesh. The place Radha, it's not Radha as in Radharani, but it's a place where the Ganges doesn't flow. It's a little to the west of the Ganges. And so Nityananda told some coward boys there, if this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he asks you where the Vrindavan is, the path to Vrindavan, you send him on the path toward the Ganges. And so they complied. And he started going to the Ganges. And when he got to the Ganges, Nityananda said, oh, just see, you've come to the Yamuna. And meanwhile, he had told, I forget who, to go back to Advaita's house, Chandrasekhar Acharya was also with him, to go to Advaita and tell him to come on a boat and bring some fresh clothes. He had no other clothes, copan and so forth. And so, Lord Chaitanya, as soon as he saw the Ganges, he thought it was the Muni. He dove in, he chanted so many mantras in glorification of the Ganges. He was in ecstasy, thought he had come to Vrindavan. He'd completely lost track of time. So then when he saw Advaita Acharya coming in a boat, you can imagine a little rowboat, with some new copans, he had some suspicion about what the whole situation was. He said, oh, Nityananda has cheated me. He told me this was the Yamuna, but it's the Ganges. But Advaita said, no, actually it is the Yamuna. Because, at Prayag, the Yamuna and the Ganges merge. And so if you can see, the Yamuna stays on the west side and the Ganges on the east side and all the way down to Bengal. So he said, you're actually bathed in the Yamuna side of what was known as the Ganges. So he didn't lie to you. So this whole pastime is full of these deceptive, you know, talks and hidden, you know, even, you know, lies, you know, white lies. So anyway, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu surrendered to that, and Advaita's please said, please come home. You haven't eaten in 3 days. We, you know, my wife has cooked a little vegetable, you know, and rice, simple vegetable and rice, and you can take your first alms at my home. This is my request, you know. And meanwhile, he had Chandrasekhar going to get Sachimata to come to the house, you know, to see her son again one more time. It's a very emotional scene. So Lord Chaitanya agreed, and he and Nityananda went with Advaita to Shantipur, to his home in Shantipur. So meanwhile, Advaita's wife had been cooking all morning, and she had created a huge feast, Sita Thakurani, which was nicely described. Krishna's Kaviraj was known as a great cook, actually, before he, you know, came to Vrindavan. And he also describes, and if you read Govinda Lilamrita or any of his books, he has a wonderful understanding of all the different preparations. Some of you we don't even know what they are. He just gives the Sanskrit or the Bengali. So they had these three different plates, big plates. One was metal and two were palm leaves. In a room, and Advaita, they offered it all to, they divided it in three, because Advaita knew that Nityananda and Chaitanya were actually Krishna and Balaram. So the offering was going on simultaneously. It wasn't like offered to Krishna and transferred to place for Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But after that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into the room and he saw those three plates and he thought all three of them were offered to Krishna and now they should be transferred off and he'll take a little simple vegetable like that, you know. So Advaita had to convince him to sit down at the big plate. And Chaitanya went, no, sannyasi should not eat so opulently. You know, how could he control his senses in that way? And Advaita said, I know who you really are. You're in Puri, you eat 54 times a day. You know, this little plate of prasadam isn't even a morsel for you. You know, he's saying you're the same as Jagannath. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu laughed and they sat down. And he said, how can I eat so much prasadam? Meanwhile, Nityananda Prabhu was saying, I had hoped to break my fast after 3 days, but this isn't even a morsel for me. You know, so he starts this whole banter with Advaita Acharya in that way. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was just trying not to take it, and Nityananda said, it's too much. Nityananda saying, it's not enough, and Chaitanya says, it's too much. So Advaita says, all right, just stop your caviling, you know, and just sit, and let me feed you. So he started filling up and had all different varieties of vegetables and big pile of chapatis, you know, soaked in ghee and 3-4 different kinds of rice, you know, pushpana rice with a little curd and so many different, this cake, that cake, and 4 different kinds of dals, and it just kept coming and coming, hundreds and hundreds of pots of prasadam, all prepared to perfection by Sita Thakurani and her maids, servants. So Advaita was serving them out. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would eat like half of one pot and then discarded half one pot. But as soon as he ate the half, then Advaita would fill it up again and he'd have to eat. So finally, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how can I go on eating like this? And meanwhile, Nityananda Prabhu is saying, you have invited me here. You're a Brahmin and I'm, you know, renunciant and you haven't even fed me, you know. And Advaita says, you are a reject Paramahansa. You know, why didn't you get out? You know, why did you get up and get out? You know, so then at one point Nityananda, he says, this prasadam is nothing. He throws the rice, you know, and like if you're hit by rice, like you're contaminated, you're supposed to take a bath. But as soon as Advaita was hit by one or two grains of rice, or as it's nicely said, 2 or 4 grains of rice, he immediately jumped up and started dancing in ecstasy. Because he felt he'd been blessed by the remnants of Nityananda Prabhu. So this little banter back and forth is you're warned, never take it seriously. You know, one may insult the other, one may insult the other, but we can see it's just part of the leela. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ate and ate, and finally he couldn't eat anymore. And so then Advaita Acharya brought the cardamom and everything and took him to the beds and laid him down and put sandalwood pulp. Then he started massaging their feet and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, okay, you've made me dance in so many ways. Now go take your prasadam, you know, and stop like that. So that was the beginning of the festival. Then they had, after that, kirtan. You know, that was just a nap they took. And then it was this 3 hours of kirtan with all the ecstatic symptoms manifesting. And all the residents of Navadvip had come to Shantipur to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the last time. And so there was a 10-day festival, and every day was the same thing. They had big feasting and a huge kirtan, 3 hours a day. And Prabhupada says in his purport that we should institute that in all our centers. We should have this 3 hours of kirtan every night now in our centers. We have yet to follow that instruction. Maybe we'll start doing that soon. But in any case, so then what happened was Shachimata comes. Chandrasekhar brings her on this palanquin. It's this huge emotional scene. You know, she's seeing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a little Nimai, you know, the head shaved. It's a huge shock for a mother to see her son. Of course, the wife couldn't come. She has to stay at home, Vishnupriya. But so she starts crying, you know, and she takes, imagine, he's 7 feet tall. She takes him on her lap, you know, and starts caressing his body and kissing his cheek, but she can't see him. The eyes are full of tears, you know. And she says, oh, you know, you've taken sannyas, and if I never see you again like Vishwaroop, he never came back, I'll just die, you know. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, oh, in some kind of madness I took sannyas, but you are my master. Whatever you tell me to do, I'll do. Wherever you tell me to go, I'll go. You know, there's this whole maternal and ras, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in the role of this son. And then, so then what happens is she says, oh, wait, let me cook, you know, because they all started inviting Lord Chaitanya around for these, you know, they wanted, Srivas Thakur wanted to cook for him and everything. So Shatimata said, look, you're going to be able to see him again. I have to stay at home. Let me just cook for this festival. He said, okay, whatever you want. You know, your order is a Vedic injunction. We must follow it. And then the big thing was that, well, okay, please just stay in Jagannath Puri, which is not that far from Navadvip. And the devotees will come and go, and then I'll get some news of you. At least that way, you know, my separation will be mitigated. So he agreed to do that. He was ecstatic to do that because, of course, that's where Jagannath is. So then the whole pastime started. So anyway, the festival goes on for 10 days, and during that time there's all this chanting and everything. And finally, at the time, Lord Chaitanya is ready to leave for Jagannath Puri with these five that I mentioned before. There were four, Nityananda, Damodara, Mukunda, and Jagadananda. It's, you know, a huge emotional scene. Then so advice, so just stay for two or three more days, you know. And then, of course, he stays again. You know, this is like it happens again and again like this. You're about to leave, and says, the same thing happened when Nanda Maharaj and all the residents of Vrindavan came to Kurukshetra. You know, Nanda saw Vasudeva after a long time, because Vasudeva was living with Krishna in Dwarka. And so Vasudeva says, oh, just stay a little while longer, you know, or leave in the afternoon. You were going to leave this morning, but leave in the afternoon. Then the afternoon comes and says, oh, it's too late to leave. Why don't you leave tomorrow morning? He says, okay. So in this way, a whole month goes by. I mean, he's staying and staying with all the residents. You know. So this is a sign of deep love and affection. You know, the pain, the terror of, you know, separation is there. So, okay, just stay a few more days. So finally the time comes and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, okay, I have to leave now. And all the residents are shocked and they fall on the ground crying. And Advaita Acharya goes after him. He starts following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And finally Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraces and says, look, you're the leader. If you can't take my separation, and, you know, how are the others going to take it? So you have to be the Acharya, you know, so go back, and then off he goes, finally, to Puri. Of course, all the residents, except Shachimata, I don't think she ever went. They would go every year for the Jagannath Rasa Yatra. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would sometimes, he would come, sometimes in subtle time, he would heat the offering. She would make some offering to him, and then he would eat. It would disappear. She wondered what happened, you know. So they remained in touch, Shachimata and Lord Chaitanya. So now we have a few minutes. I'll see how much of this I can read. This is the story of Advaita Acharya, beginning from his birth and everything. Nicely summarized by Satyaraj Prabhu in his Panchatattva book. So we'll try to read some of this and see how far we get. It's not that long. Okay. Let's see. The life of Advaita Acharya has been the subject of several texts. Okay. Tradition holds that Lalabadevi, or Nabadevi, Advaita Acharya's mother, once had a dream in which Lord Sadashiva, the original form of Shiva, foresaw the wicked age of Kali. As her dream progressed, she saw Sadashiva become filled with compassion, and in this state he decided to go to the shore of the causal ocean. To the shore of the causal ocean, where Mahavishnu lies in mystic slumber, and beseech him for his mercy. Realizing that Vishnu responds to the sacrifices of his devotees, he decided to perform severe austerities for 700 years on behalf of humanity. Seeing Sadashiva in his mood of compassion for the suffering masses, Mahavishnu appeared to him and said, "My dear Sadashiva, why are you trying to please me with difficult austerities? You and I are one." So this whole idea of Sadashiva being like the glance of Mahavishnu. Sadashiva replied, "My dear Lord, unless you empower me to save mankind in the age of Kali, how can I do it?" Hearing this question, Mahavishnu embraced Sadashiva, and by their shared compassion, they took one form, and this manifestation would appear on earth as Advaita Acharya. As Laba Devi's dream continued, she saw Yamaraj approach the Lord and say, "My dear Lord, if you descend in the age of Kali as Advaita Acharya to deliver everyone, then there'll be no more work for me. There will no longer be sinners for me to punish in hell." The Lord consoled Yama, saying, "My dear Yama, don't worry. All those wicked people who purposely try to avoid the nectarian wave of divine love that will inundate the people of Kali, the impersonalists, the fruit of workers, the false logicians, the offenders, and the atheists, they will still be available for you to take to hell. So don't worry." So with this assurance, Yamaraj was satisfied and went home. After this dream, Advaita's mother planned her next day with great appreciation for the Lord and his mysterious ways. So then what happens is she and her husband move to Bangladesh and to Shantipur. And Advaita appears, but then he wants to backtrack and give a little back information. Kuvera Pundit, Advaita's father, was a learned Brahmin, an expert in the performance of Vedic sacrifice, and a scholar of the Vedas. He was born in 1410 A.D. Okay. And lived in the Srihatta district of what is today known as Bangladesh, in the village of Nauda. In his previous birth, Advaita's father was the celestial treasurer Kuvera, the head of the Guyukas. Since he was one of Shiva's loyal disciples, he was blessed by being allowed to descend to earth as Shiva's very own father, the father Advaita Acharya. Before Advaita's birth, Kuvera Pandit and Labha Devi had been blessed with six sons, and he names them. They also had a daughter who died near birth. Of the six boys, four took sannyas, leaving home to travel to the holy places. The two remaining sons, elder brothers of Advaita, became householders. Kuvera Pandit was despondent because his four sons had left home, and as a result, he took a leave of absence from his job as a court advisor to King Divya Singh, the emperor of Srihatta. Kuvera went with his wife to Shantipur in West Bengal, and there they spent their time performing austerities on the bank of the Ganges. When in Shantipur, Kuvera performed Maunavrata, didn't say anything. And it was at this time that his wife had the dream mentioned before. When she told her husband about it, he became elated, thinking that the Lord himself would descend in his wife's womb. Soon after that, she became pregnant, and soon after that, they returned to Lauda. From this moment on, Advaita Prabhu manifested in their minds without cessation, and a divine effulgence radiated from their hearts. So the people of Srihatta became ecstatic when they heard of her pregnancy. And in January or February of 1434, the Lord known as Advaita Acharya appeared. So that's on this day, 1434. That's 52 years before Lord Chaitanya's appearance. At the auspicious time of his birth, the people of Srihatta were bathing in the Ganges, and the holy name of Hari redounded everywhere, just as when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. At the anaprashana ceremony, when they give the grains, you see, the babies are fed their first grains, the family priest gave him the name Kamalaksha, or Lotus-Eyed One. He was also given the name Advaita, because he was non-different from the Lord. It is said that baby Advaita engaged in many naughty childhood activities, just as Nitai and Nimai would do many years later. He refused to drink from his mother's breast unless she loudly chanted Hare Krishna. He also enjoyed bewildering people with his divine powers. One night, Laba Devi had a divine vision in which her child took her to a high mountain in the Srihatta area on the day called Varuni Snan. This is an auspicious day in March, April, 13th day of bright moon. She long desired to bathe in the holy rivers of India, and so on this auspicious day, Kamalaksha took her to this mountain to fulfill her blessed desire. As they stood on this mountain, all of India's holy rivers appeared before Kamalaksha, who was effulgent in his divine four-armed form as Mahavishnu. And all those rivers offered prayers to him. With the reverberation of conch shells, the rivers ascended the mountain and began to shower Lava Devi with their divine waters. As Kamalaksha's mother enjoyed feeling the holy rivers engulf her, he said, look, mother, there is the red Saraswati, there's the Ganga, there's the Yamuna, and so forth. Kamalaksha's childhood was replete with the activities in the mood of Shiva, or Rudra. And there's another book quoted. It is said that he was once playing with the son of Divya Singh in a cave. The prince began to mock devotees and chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Kamalaksha became so angry that the prince, who was otherwise quite brave, actually fainted out of shock. When Kamalaksha was 5 to 10 years old, he quickly grew in learning and became quite the child prodigy. Even as a young boy, he always used to use his learning to show the supremacy of Vishnu or Krishna. On one occasion, King Divya Singh, who was a devotee of Durga, sent his son with Kamalaksha to visit a Durga temple. Kamalaksha entered the temple in a challenging mood, saying, "Show me your goddess." And then he came before the deity, and when he came before the deity, he refused to bow down. The king's son became offended, and Kamalaksha in turn became so angry that the boy again fell unconscious because of Advaita's intensity. So this is like a little pastime they have here. But because Kamalaksha was performing the leela of a little child, he became frightened and ran off to hide. Just then, some village boys went out to look for him, and after some time managed to find him and bring him back to the temple where the king was waiting with Kuvera Pandit. The king was naturally upset when he saw his son lying as if dead. But Kamalaksha quickly remedied the situation by sprinkling Charanamrita over the kid's head. At that point, the prince came back to consciousness, and so forth. On another similar occasion, the boys went to Durga, this time in Deepavali or Diwali. That's Durga's special day when they light all the lamps. Kamalaksha again refused to bow down, and the prince again became disturbed, calling for Kamalaksha's father. When Kuvera Pandit arrived, he had a discussion with his son on the subject of demigod worship, reminding him that even Lord Ram had worshipped the goddess Durga to get back his kidnapped wife, Sita. To this, Kamalaksha said, "Dear father, excuse me, but I would like to illustrate the point that you are slightly misled on this subject. Just as a tree is nourished with all its branches, leaves, and twigs only when its roots are watered, secondary gods are satisfied only when the primeval Lord Vishnu or Krishna is worshipped. As the chakora bird can only live in moonlight, I can only worship Vishnu or Krishna." Just then, the Durga image on the temple burst into pieces and the goddess herself came out, illuminating the 10 directions. A mystic voice then filled the room, proclaiming, "The husband will never bow down to the wife." In this way, Durga indicated that the boy Kamalaksha was none other than Durga's husband, Lord Shiva. So that's why he wasn't bowing down. After the goddess spoke in this way, the king understood that he had committed an offense and that Kamalaksha was Shiva himself. Ashamed, the king offered appropriate prayers to the Lord. And then Kamalaksha warned the king that his son was mocking the Vaishnavas and that he himself was a demigod worshipper, which was a sign of ignorance. So it goes on like that. After the king's conversion, so he was converted to being a Vaishnava then. He built a big temple. Kamalaksha, still a young boy, went with his parents to Shantipur, the place from which his father's family came. He lived by the side of the Ganges and in school told all his classmates that the holy names of Krishna are the source of all knowledge. As the years passed, he studied the 6 Vedic philosophical systems and the Veda itself and mastered them. At this time, although still not quite a teenager, he received the Veda Panchanana, an advanced degree in Vedic scholarship, usually awarded to people more than twice his age. His teacher, Shantacharya, lived in the village of Purnapati. It is sometimes said it was Shantacharya who gave Kamalaksha the name Advaita, but most authorities accept that he was given the name at birth. Shantacharya was aware of Kamalaksha's divinity and wanted to reveal it to the boy's classmates, who were envious of his showing him favor. One day, Shantacharya was walking in the forest with his students when they came to a lake filled with beautiful lotus flowers and fearsome snakes. Shantacharya pointed to a platform in the middle of the lake with a huge, extraordinarily beautiful lotus flower on it. He asked his students if any of them could cross the water to get the big lotus and bring it to him without getting hurt. Most students were intimidated by the request, but Kamalaksha stepped forward and volunteered. He cautiously entered the water, and at every step, a lotus mystically appeared to carry him. And at the same time, a big snake rose out of the water, spreading its hood to shade him like the celestial snake Ananta shades Vishnu. In this way, Kamalaksha safely reached the platform and picked the lotus to give his teacher. His fellow students were amazed, and each vowed to always respect Advaita from that day on. I can imagine they would. When Advaita Prabhu reached his teens, his parents, both in their late 80s or early 90s, departed for Sri Vaikuntha, leaving behind the material world. Advaita, as part of his lila, mourned the death of his parents and soon after went on pilgrimage. He went to Orissa, where in great ecstasy he saw the Gopinath deity. He then went to Nabagaya, to Puri, Godavari, Shivakanchi, and so forth. Madhavendra Puri immediately felt great love for Advaita. He met Madhavendra at Udupi. And Madhavendra immediately felt great love for Advaita, whom he saw as the embodiment of the perfect devotee. And together they discussed the urgent need for an incarnation to descend to earth in the current age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Advaita then predicted the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, telling Madhavendra the confidential lila of the Lord. After meeting Madhavendra Puri in Udupi and disclosing to him the Lord's mission, Advaita carried on with his pilgrimage, visiting Dandakaranya, Nasik, etc. Then, to his great delight, he arrived in Mithila, where he saw Sita Devi's place of birth. This made him shed tears of love. And there he met Vidyapati, the great devotional poet, and then proceeded to Ayodhya. He went to Varanasi and bathed in Manikarnika Ghat, and so forth. Let's see. He went to Mathura, where he visited, among other places, the house of Kubja. He offered his deepest respects to Janmastan, the place of Krishna's birth. So he had an ecstatic time, showing all kinds of ecstasies in Vrindavan, of course. Advaita's relation with the Madan Mohan deity is quite confidential. One day when Advaita was sleeping under a banyan tree, the deity appeared to him in a dream and said, "I was being worshipped here, but the priest, because he was afraid of Muslims, left me and fled to protect his own life. I am hidden at Vadashidditya Tila, under the present flow of the Yamuna. Please unearth me and install me in my proper place." So this, of course, recalls the pastime of Madhavendra Puri, unearthing the Gopal deity. After waking from his sleep, Advaita Prabhu found the site, dug up the deity, and installed him with the help of some local Rajvasis. They performed the customary bathing ceremony, and at that time Advaita rubbed Madan Mohan's body so thoroughly that the Lord regained his original smooth, blackish complexion. Some days later, when Advaita was traveling, a group of Muslims came and attacked him, attacked Advaita Vata. The deity hid himself under a heap of old sanctified flowers that were previously offered to the Lord, and thus he was not destroyed. When Advaita Prabhu returned, Madan Mohan again told him a dream where he had hidden himself, and so he again excavated him. So it was during this period that Madhavendra came to Vrindavan and met Advaita Prabhu for a second time. Puripad, that's of course Madhavendra, went into fits of ecstasy when Advaita told him of Madan Mohan's order, and concurring with the deity, he explained to Advaita the inappropriateness of worshipping Krishna without Radha, since Krishna can never be happy without her love. She is his pleasure-giving potency, Ladini Shakti. Madhavendra Puri advised Advaita to get married in order to properly worship his deities. He suggested that a renunciant has a tendency to give up his deities at the time of death, but a householder always has his wife, children, and other relatives or descendants to take over the service of the deity if he falls ill or dies. Nevertheless, Madhavendra assured Advaita that he would take upon himself the reactions to any offenses made to the deity by the next 14 generations of Advaita Prabhu's family. This was one reason why Advaita Prabhu got married and created the Advaita family lineage. Another reason, as seen in Nityananda Prabhu's example as well, was to spread the Yuga Dharma among the householders as opposed to just a select group of recluses and transcendentalists. Madhavendra went with Advaita to Shantipur and stayed with him for 1 month. While there, he instructed Advaita in the science of chanting, telling him that the power of the holy name was the only way to attain deliverance in the present age of Kali. It was at this time in Shantipur that Madhavendra gave initiation to Advaita. Soon after the initiation, Madhavendra left Shantipur to continue his mission in other parts of India. So, a few more minutes. Advaita quickly became the most respected Vaishnava of Shantipur. Once, after defeating a champion scholar in debate, a voice in the sky uttered the following words, "This Brahmin is not an ordinary man. He is God himself, because nobody is more learned than he. His name is Advaita." Advaita met Haridas Thakur, the Muslim-born devotee, who was always chanting, and they became great friends. Advaita built a dwelling for Haridas in a cave and personally trained him in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. The respect that these two pure devotees felt for each other cannot be described. Together they organized Sankirtan in Navadvip before Mahaprabhu came to work with them. Advaita Prabhu tried to encourage young Nimai to join their Sankirtan team, but Nimai was merely interested in scholarship. This was prior to his Sankirtan pastimes. It took some time and his relationship with Ishwarpuri before Mahaprabhu relented and outwardly showed his appreciation of the Vaishnavas. Before his marriage, Advaita initiated Mahaprabhu's most intimate associates, such as Vasudev Dutt, Bhagavad Acharya, Yadunandan Acharya, the guru of Raghunath Das, as well as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's parents. That story is recounted as follows. Okay, so maybe we'll skip that one. When Advaita Prabhu turned 50, he decided to take Madha Pandrapuri's advice to get married. Nrisinga Bhadhuri, this is the father of the bride-to-be. His daughter Sita was like the goddess of fortune, and according to tradition, she was an incarnation of Yoga Maya. So then the marriage to Sita Devi is described. He had two wives. He initiated his two young wives, just like Purnamasi Yogamaya gave initiation to the young Dutis, girl messengers of Radha and Krishna, Veera and Brinda. So he could not tolerate the complete absence of spirituality in the people of his time. To alleviate the burden of the masses, he tried various forms of worship to appreciate the Supreme. He offered flowers to the Ganga, and by divine providence, these flowers floated downstream to touch the body of Mother Shachi, who was bathing there. As a result of this, her son Vishwarup, an incarnation of Sankarshan, was born. The scriptures say that the Lord, who is very kind to his devotees, offers himself to whoever offers him even a mere tulsi leaf or a handful of water. Knowing this, Advaita sat down on the Ganges, and his whole body shivering and perspiring with ecstasy, he called for the Lord to descend with offerings of Ganges water and tulsi leaves. It was thus, through Advaita's mercy, that the Lord appeared. So, should I wind it up or another few minutes? Archita? Okay. A few more minutes. There's only a few more pages. Okay. That's right, there's no breakfast. When Mahaprabhu displayed his pastimes in Navadvip, Advaita Prabhu was already settled in Shantipur. Still, Advaita would come regularly to see the Lord. The Chaitanya Bhagavat informs us that when Mahaprabhu showed his divine opulences, Mahaprakash, for the first time in the house of Shiva's Thakur, Ramai Pandit came to Shantipur and told Advaita Prabhu about it. Advaita immediately came to Navadvip with his worship paraphernalia to perform the first celebration of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the house of Nandan Acharya. At that time, Advaita Prabhu worshipped the Lord with this verse, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha, Jagad Hitaya Krishnaya, Govindaya Namo Namaha. My repeated obeisances to Krishna, who is Govinda, the Lord of the Brahmins, the friend of the cows, and the benefactor of the whole universe. Because he never saw any difference between Mahaprabhu and Krishna, Advaita never used any new or separate mantra for the worship of Lord Chaitanya. Advaita was the first to boldly proclaim that Mahaprabhu was none other than the Supreme Lord himself. And it was Advaita, too, who was given the vision of Mahaprabhu in the universal form. That's told in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Advaita Prabhu's first son, Achyutananda, was born in 1493, 7 years after Mahaprabhu. And Balaram, Gopal, Krishnadas, and the twins, Jagadish and Swarup, were born at intervals of 4 years, all from the womb of his first wife, Sita Devi. Ultimately, Advaita rejected three of his sons for deviating from the path of Mahaprabhu and accepted three, Achyutananda, Gopal, and Krishnadas. So this is always amazing how even the offspring of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Advaita Acharya, they weren't totally, all of them, devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we see something similar. Srila Prabhupada had his sons, and one of them was a friend of the movement, but one of them was tried to sue the movement for millions of dollars. So everyone has his own will. Balaram and Krishna Das were the only two sons to enter household life. The other four became sannyasis. All the children took initiation from their mother, Sita Devi. Prema Vilas says that Sri Devi, the younger sister, had a baby as well, a boy named Chota Shamadas, but the child is said to have died immediately after birth. Achyutananda was considered Advaita's greatest son. Some say that he took initiation from Gadadhar Pandit and lived in Puri as Gadadhar's servant. Tradition holds that Achyutananda embodied pure devotion in the spirit of his father. Advaita Prabhu was always eager to receive the dust of Nimai Pandit's feet, to serve him as a humble devotee, but Nimai always treated Advaita as his worshipable superior. Therefore, Advaita Prabhu devised a plan, or rather a trick, to obtain Mahaprabhu's mercy. Advaita began to teach impersonalist philosophy in Shantipur. And because of this, Nityananda and Mahaprabhu became furious, traveling from Navadvip just to chastise him. Now, chastising, you know, Prabhupada would always say chastise. The first meaning of chastise is to beat with a stick. It has a secondary meaning of to scold. So they were going to do both of these, basically. The two divine brothers first consulted with Gauridas Pandit, who reported that when he had asked Advaita Prabhu if we are all to be considered one with God, Advaita replied, yes. And then he showed Gauridas his forearm form and later also a six-arm form. Mahaprabhu was actually amused when he heard this, but he pretended to be in the angry mood of Lord Nrisimhadev. Rushing to where Advaita was staying, he found Advaita preaching his foolish impersonalism. He asked Advaita the following question three times. Gyanavad va bhaktivad. You know what that means. It means jnana or bhakti. Which is it going to be? You know, which is true. Which is better, devotion to a personal god or impersonal monism? And three times, Advaita replied, jnana! Then in a fit of rage, Mahaprabhu kicked him on the back with his lotus feet and started play fighting with him. It was only by Sita Devi's persistent begging that Mahaprabhu desisted. She was unaware that the entire scenario was orchestrated by Advaita, for he felt that in this way he could easily receive the Lord's attention and mercy. When Mahaprabhu took sannyas, so I'll describe it in more detail, I think in Chaitanya Bhagavad, he was then dancing in ecstasy to have been kicked by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The same thing happened with Shivananda Sen. When he failed somehow or other, because he was delayed by the dog, I think, to make proper arrangements when they were all traveling to Puri. Nityananda was among them. And Nityananda was, they hadn't made arrangements for prasadam or for lodgings. And when Sivananda Sen finally showed up, Nityananda kicked him. And he said, where are my lodging? Where's the prasadam? I'll curse your sons to die. You know, something, he said something like that. And Shivananda's wife started crying, and he chastised her and said, this is the greatest thing that's happened. I've been blessed by Nityananda Prabhu, you know. So, this is the great devotees appreciate it. When Mahaprabhu took sannyas, Mother Shachi accused Advaita Acharya, her guru, of initially convincing her first son, Vishwarup, to leave her and take sannyas. And now he was taking away her youngest child in the same way? For this offense to her guru, Nimai asked her to touch Advaita Prabhu's lotus feet. And then, out of a true grateful spirit, Nimai gave her the gift of divine love. So he had said, I give everyone divine love except my mother, Shachi. And everyone was shocked. Why? And that's because she's offended Advaita Acharya. So she went and bowed down to his lotus feet. One day, the three lords, Nittai, Nimai, and Advaita, desired to dramatically perform Krishna's toll-collecting sport, or Dana Leela. Advaita played Krishna, Mahaprabhu played Radha, and Nityananda played the gopis' older governess who accompanied them. Srivas Thakur and the other devotees played the gopis, and Kamalakanta, Gauridas Pandit, and others played the coward boys. They all dressed themselves in appropriate costumes and hired a boat on the bank of the Ganges. Decorating the boat as well as the ghat with sandalwood paste, vermilion, and flower garlands, the boys dug up various sticks, flutes and bugle horns, so they could really simulate. So the devotees playing the parts of boys dug up flutes and so forth, so they could really simulate the paraphernalia that Krishna and his associates would carry. They stopped playing on their horns when they saw Sri Radha and her friends coming with big earthen pots on their heads. The old lady, Nityananda, announced, We are on our way to Mathura to sell our curd, milk, and sweet rice. Subal replied, why have you come here? You must pay tax in this place. Then Krishna came forward and said, yes, you must pay. The gopis tried to negotiate, and they were willing to give 4 coins per person. But Krishna wanted 8. Just then the gopis said, you're supposed to be a king's son, Krishna. Aren't you ashamed? Don't you have enough money already? Let us pass at once. To this Krishna replied, well, since all of you gopis have such heavy breasts and buttocks, it will not be possible for me to take more than one of you on my boat at a time. My boat leaks, you see. Reacting to this statement, Nittai, as the older gopi, began to scold Krishna, saying, let us pass immediately, otherwise our curd and milk will go sour. But Krishna would not hear of it. He insisted on a double fee for the overweight caused by the gopis and their ornaments, and he threatened to smash the pots on their heads with his stick if they didn't pay. At this point, the 3 lords jumped in the water in ecstasy and played there while the other devotees performed kirtan on the bank. It is said that Advaita Prabhu remained manifest on earth for a full 25 years after the disappearance of Mahaprabhu, an event that had Advaita and his family in a tearful state for months. Feeling separation from Nimai and Nittai, constantly remembering them and chanting their names, he called together his favorite sons, Achyutananda, Gopal, and Krishnadas, and he sent for Virachandra Prabhu and Goridas Pandit from Ambika Kalna, as well as his leading disciples, Yadunandanacharya, Shyamdas, and Kamadev. They performed kirtan in a state of divine rapture, and Advaita suddenly made his way into the deity room of Sri Radha Madana Gopal, never again to return. This event constitutes the disappearance of Advaita Prabhu in 1559 in Shantipur. So he has a little conclusion here. In conclusion, it should be said that Advaita Prabhu was clearly the efficient cause of both Mahaprabhu's appearance and disappearance. While his fervent prayers brought Mahaprabhu to his planet, a point we have already touched upon, it was his cryptic poem saying that rice is no longer needed in the marketplace because everyone has become mad like Mahaprabhu himself that led to Mahaprabhu's disappearance. This sonnet had a concealed meaning that bewildered the mass of devotees. Only Srup Damodar Mahaprabhu and perhaps Jagadananda Pandit, who brought the poem to Mahaprabhu, were able to fully understand it. Basically, the rice referred to Mahaprabhu himself. And since love of God had spread sufficiently, the rice was no longer needed. Advaita was in essence saying that Mahaprabhu had fulfilled his mission, had accomplished what he had intended to achieve. Since people were now intoxicated with love of God, Mahaprabhu no longer needed to stay on the planet to supply rice in the marketplace. In this way, Advaita Prabhu plays what in some ways may be considered the most important role in Mahaprabhu's pastimes. He unveils the Lord's Leela for the conditioned souls of the phenomenal world, and then after accomplishing Mahaprabhu's mission of love, he winds it up and sends it back to the spiritual world. Shri Advaita Mahaprabhu ki jai. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Lunch at 12:30 today.